Hello again, and welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin Walter, the host. True Wealth, as always, is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. We are always actively involved in the purchase and sale of all forms of precious metals. That's gold and silver, platinum, palladium, how about rhodium, copper, within reason. We're not a scrap house or an iron yard, but we deal in all that stuff. We obviously deal in old coins, anything with value over its face value, even foreign coins of old use or whatever, and you name it, we buy it. Old paper currency, all kinds of, believe it or not, old U.S. unused stamps by the sheet. Stamps are going out, aren't they? I don't even think we know what those are anymore. Everything's electronically posted, I guess you'd call it. So much business is transferred to UPS and FedEx, it's probably not even funny anymore. I don't know who uses the post office much anymore. Do you? Probably not many people at all. But anyway, we buy and sell rare coins, preferably by the truckload, or I don't know if it's preferable, but it's what we do. We buy and sell them. We go through a tremendous amount of coins and metals. We do portfolio building, wealth and capital preservation, and what we do specialize in is hand-selecting items for you. It's very important to us that we want you to succeed. As I've said numerous times, we win when you win. That's our philosophy. And so we believe we're very good at what we do. As I was speaking with the guy who called yesterday about a potential employment opportunity from Texas, I said, you know, I mean, our business model was very foreign to him, and here's why. By the way, you can reach Coins Plus in the local Spokane, Washington, Eastern Washington area, 509-444-0044. You can call us from anywhere toll-free for 877-TAP-COIN or 877-827-2646. So anyway, this young gentleman who's been in the coin business for a while, maybe not so young, I was explaining our business model, our philosophies, goals, identity, etc., and he was kind of stumped. He's like, I've never really heard of anything like that, and here's why. We combine Nordstrom's with coin wholesalers, the dealer-to-dealer wholesalers, with the marketing retailers, and here's how we do it. We, you know, when you call a marketing company, someone you see advertising about gold and silver, you're going to get an account executive who gets a commission on your sales. We have no commission salespeople, but they'll give you time. That's what they do. They talk and talk and talk, and they help you out and maybe persuade you to do something different or whatever, and they get a commission based on profit. The problem with that is that their primary goal and ambition is to maximize profit on you, okay? So although we'll give you that Nordstrom service, I like to call it, we don't have anybody with that kind of a conflict of interest. There is nobody here who gets paid remotely off of the profit we make from a customer. To me, that's a very strict principle. When you start using words like investment and you start having a conflict of interest with the customer's best interest, in my opinion, you have stepped drastically over the fiduciary ethical line. Okay, so we have no one is tied to maximizing profits. Employees are tied to personal performance, store performance, customer service, etc. We have good months and bad months. the guys get a base salary and bonuses. Bonuses are based a lot on hours worked. We work long hours. This is not a tiptoe in the park business just because the volume of material we deal in. And frankly, I probably have half killed myself because this business technically requires me to go without sleep a lot. I know it's bad for you and all that, but there's too much to do. And that's just the nature of the beast. So the guys all work 50, 55 hours a week and they get compensated accordingly, et cetera. So we have that high customer service without any kind of financial commission pressure, et cetera. The second thing we do is we wholesale. Okay. So what that means is, and the wholesale and retail markets are growing closer anyway because we live in the internet era. And we live, I would have to suspect, when Daniel said, seal up this book until such a time as knowledge shall increase and people shall travel to and fro upon the earth or across the earth. I would suspect that there's a possibility that we may just be either in that era or we're darn close. I don't quite know how knowledge could increase more. I really don't. I mean, we've got the internet. We have the constant production of knowledge and wisdom, information, and don't get me wrong, knowledge and wisdom are not synonymous. But basically, when you go to Daniel 12:4, Daniel says, those who have insight. Well, let's go back up. This is interesting. 12:1. Now, at the time, Michael, the great prince who stands guard over the sons of your people, I'm assuming Michael the archangel, will arise, and there will be a time of distress such has never occurred since there was a nation until that time. And at that time, your people, everyone who is found written in the book, will be rescued. Okay? It's the tribulation. Many of those who sleep in the dust of the ground will awake, these to everlasting life, but the others to disgrace and everlasting contempt. Sad scenario, folks. I'm going to just take a quick moment there. I'm not a preacher, but I love God. I know the Bible. It's simple to understand. It's becoming very politically incorrect to discuss hell or separation from God. There's all these weird people that try to outthink it and say, did you know that hell wasn't mentioned in the Old Testament until the New Testament and all that? And, you know, then they say, well, you know, you got Hades and Sheol and Gehenna, and then people start arguing what this and that meant. And then you get into translations from the original Hebrew, and I've done all that. And what you basically end up at is a pretty obvious statement about hell. But here's the problem. People say, no, 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 look at that word. It means this. If you study the Bible, folks, Hebrew, you're going to find that there are so many English words they attempt to use to describe a Hebrew word, it's nuts. So just because a Hebrew word may have a translation that doesn't fit or, you know, fits differently or whatever, doesn't mean it's right. And a lot of times what I've seen is translators putting in, like in NIV, putting in their own prejudice and bias without even realizing what they're doing when God gives them a vision or whatever. So anyway, where I was going with that is this. if you don't have your life right with God, you don't have to be a biblical scholar. You don't have to understand it all. All you need to know is that you're broken, fallen, and failed. That you're not perfect, that you've done it your way and enough's enough. You just confess your sins to God and accept Him, and then you will no longer be part of those people, it says, that are going to be awakened from the dirt, but only to find disgrace and everlasting contempt. Above, it says that everyone who's written in the found written in the book of life, will be rescued. You can be that person. So if you haven't accepted Christ, do it now. You just need to pray, Lord, I'm sorry. Forgive me. I've fallen. I've sinned. I don't want my own way. And give Him your will. That's the hardest part. I call it the cheapest, most expensive, easiest, hardest thing you'll ever do. It costs absolutely nothing, but it costs you everything because you have to surrender your will. Man is swollen with false pride. Man is swollen with pride. Cheapest, most expensive. It costs nothing, but it costs everything. Hardest, easiest, okay? Sounds easy. Nothing tangible, no physical sacrifice, just your heart and God. Again, the hardest thing for man to do. Just, and the weird thing is God made us. And you're like, no, He didn't. My mother did. No, your mother did not make you. Your mother engaged in a certain practice that resulted in you. The biology was formed. Your mother did not make you in any way. She had no control over who you became, at least out of the womb genetically. She had no control over much of anything, which eggs ovulate at which period in time, you know, fertility rates, all that stuff. Yes, it's biology, but God is God, and He chooses to put our souls where and when He wants them. So He isn't, you know, it's just not random. It's not just a big accident. So to move on, those who have insight will shine brightly. So let's back up. Many of those who sleep in the dust of the ground will awake. These to everlasting life, but those, the others, to disgrace and everlasting contempt. Those who have the expanse of heaven and those who lead the many to righteousness, like the stars forever and ever. But as for you, Daniel, conceal these words and seal up the book until the end of time, when many will go back and forth and knowledge will increase. Then I, Daniel, looked, and behold, two others were standing, one on this bank of the river and the other on the other bank of the river, etc. So when you look at the... conceal these words, hide them, seal up the book, whatever that means. So is it the book of Revelation, you know, to seal it up until the end times? Because as the end times begin to come to fruition, all of a sudden it starts to make sense. Is, you know, what is that exactly? We don't know. But he says the end of time, when many will go back and forth, okay? Back and forth, the word is shoot. S-H in English, it means S-H-U-W-T. It means to run to and fro, to go back and forth, to go to and fro, to go about, to be gone, to travel. And then they go on to rowing and all that because that's what they used to do. To go or rove about, to go to and fro, to go eagerly or quickly to and fro. That's the key word, quickly, and to run to and fro, and it keeps saying quickly. And knowledge, when it talks about knowledge shall increase in Daniel, the word for knowledge, is dahath, okay? At first, it looks like it's spelled death, D-A-A-T-H. Knowledge means skill, wisdom, understanding, discernment, practice, perception, but knowledge is the key word. So basically, Daniel's saying, seal up the book until people are rapidly traversing the earth in high quantities. And you'll also know that that's going on because knowledge will be rapid fire onset. Everywhere you go, everywhere you turn, it's going to be absolutely crazy, the amount of knowledge. I say that's what the internet is. Notice the knowledge, wisdom can, knowledge can be wisdom, but wisdom does not, you know, wisdom and knowledge are different. Wisdom is the application of knowledge. Wisdom is an understanding. You can have so much knowledge, you can go on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and answer every question they have, but you don't have biblical godly wisdom. So how about all that for one day of a headache? So anyway, we are, I believe, easily near that end times. We had a huge transitional structural period post 9/11. I mean, we lost it, okay? We lost it. Desperation. We technically lost it this last election. Terrible. But the media, I think, fed it in an incredible way. We've just got so much knowledge and so much travel. It really is unbelievable. I mean, the fact that we can fly, the fact that we've been to the moon. I mean, can you imagine this? So today is, and by the way, you're listening to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, the host. True Wealth is sponsored by Coins Plus of Spokane, Washington, 444-0044 or 877-TAP-COIN, 877-827-2646. Anyway, Trump gets inaugurated today. It may be just the news I watched, but I didn't see any excessive focus on that kind of thing. So, anyway, Trump gave a heck of a speech today. I think he lacks charisma, but he makes up for it in sincerity and work ethic. You got to understand, Trump has phenomenal work ethic. Today for the parade, apparently the parade's 4.5. I don't know how long it is. It's long. Trump wanted to get back to work. He said he'd do it for 1.5 hours. Apparently Pence did the whole thing, the walk to the Capitol or the White House or whatever. Trump said no. He was excited to get to work from day one. He was just excited. And so that's the kind of leadership role we need for our kids. We've got this generation of snowflakes, which basically means they're all unique. You know, we're all like, oh, you know, everybody's so unique. We're all snowflakes, which means, you know, tiptoe around, act like everything's fine, watch, you know, things fully melt down before your very eyes. So I've got a copy of Donald Trump's entire inaugural transcript. Let me see how bad this is. It is pretty darn long. So maybe we'll try to touch on some highlights. How about that? First of all, I'm glad he's in office. I really have been very, very uncomfortable with the behavior of, you know, everything going on out there. The lack of forgiveness, the desire for destruction. The devil comes to steal and kill and destroy was my experience with that. And I don't know. So here we go. So he talks about Chief Justice Roberts, President Carter, Clinton, Bush, Obama, fellow Americans and people of the world, thank you. So Trump realizes his position. He knows who's all watching. By the way, there was just a massive barrage of protest applications. I don't know if some of these kind of pooped out, consolidated, or what exactly was going on. But it was. So he goes on, he says, we, the citizens of the United States of America, are now joined in a great national effort to rebuild our country and to restore its promise for all our people. Together, we will determine the course of America and the world for years to come. We will face challenges, we will confront hardships, but we will get the job done. Every 4 years, he goes through this. He says, today's ceremony has special meaning because today we're not merely transferring power from one administration to another or from one party to another, but we're transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the American people. And I think, folks, in a nutshell, that should be our goal. I mean, that really is our goal. And he's, I think his heart just really seems to be in the right place, doesn't it? I mean, he's just, today his speech had multiple references to God and the Creator, and I mean multiple, which for him seems to be a step to submit to a God that's greater than he. He discusses the economy and the fact that, you know, how things have gotten over the last so many years. He's talked about crony capitalism. He discussed how a select few are reaping the rewards of government while the people have borne the cost. And Washington has flourished. And it says, but the people do not share in its wealth. Politicians prosper, but the jobs left and the factories closed. And I think it seems that Donald Trump is very sincere about what he's doing. So he goes, he talks about crony capitalism, the establishment that protects itself. That's what's scary, too, folks. Our government is protecting its own corruption and misuse of the system. Trump is a bull in a china closet. You have to understand. I know the vast majority of my listeners appreciate him. There is a constituency out there that I talk to occasionally. I'll get phone calls and I'm like, are you kidding me? I mean, I'll get people contacting me about stuff, saying I said stuff I didn't and whatnot. But then he goes on, he says, everything changes right here, right now. It belongs to everyone gathered here today and everyone watching all across America. What's sad is you get people like Obama who act special and arrogant. And, you know, the truth of them, truth be told, these people, the activists, you know, organizers, they really haven't, they don't accomplish much except chaos, you know, and they pick the most extreme examples to go off of. He talks about how it's a government for the people, by the people. And he says, it doesn't matter which party controls our government, but whether our government is controlled by the people. So you can call it what you want. I'm trying to highlight this. It's kind of hard to do. And then he says, everyone's listening to you now, the people. You came by the tens of millions to become part of a historic movement, the likes of which the world has never seen before. He goes on about Americans want great schools for their children. I mean, Americans want the best. Trump is the epitome of that. He's obviously been showered in God's blessings, but he knows how to spend it. He knows how to enjoy it. And too many of our citizens, he said, a different reality exists. mothers and children trapped in poverty in our inner cities, rusted out factories shattered like tombstones across the landscape of our nation, he says, an education system flush with cash, but which leaves our young and beautiful students deprived of knowledge, and the crime and gangs and drugs that have stolen too many lives, and so on and so forth. He says the American carriage stops right here. The American carnage stops right here and stops right now. He says then, we are one nation, and I think we need to be reminded of this, folks. The division is becoming so great. I've touched on our founding fathers' warnings about a two-party system, and we have hit a pinnacle point of tension, frustration, picking sides, lack of wisdom, lack of perception. We're just there. So he talks about the oath of office and that it's an allegiance to Americans. And he goes back and talks about how we've been enriched by foreign industry at the expense of American industry, which I think it's pretty obvious what that means. But he's aware of it. He's got money. He's aware of it. So we've made other countries rich. Well, our wealth, strength, and confidence of our country has disappeared over the horizon. One by one, the factories shuttered and left with not even a thought about millions upon millions of American workers interested. So left behind. The wealth of the middle class has been ripped and then redistributed, has been ripped from their homes. So let's see, I'll read that again. The wealth of our middle class has been ripped from their homes and then redistributed across the entire world. And we get told, hey, you know, things are great, things are fine. I can tell you, savings accounts are becoming harder and harder and harder to come by. We're becoming more aware of that just people tend, as time goes on, to save less of an example. And, you know, all of a sudden, some guy buys something for too high of a price and the market changes on him and all of a sudden the price is up and whatever. Trump said some interesting things. From this day forward, he said, a new vision will govern our land. From this moment on, it's going to be America first. Every decision on trade, laws, or trade, taxes, immigration, or foreign affairs will be made to benefit the American workers and American families. When you get the Obamas of the world, and I know, folks, it's like, oh, Obama bash. You know, to me, this is just logic. It's very simple. So he goes and he talks about, I will fight for you, the American people, or for whoever Moses or does whatever, you know, that he can bribe them with it, but I don't think I will. And I will never, ever, ever let go, or I'll never let you down. So anyway, he goes, America will start winning again. And of course, he says, like never before, and he's probably right. He says, we'll bring back our jobs, we'll bring back our borders, we'll bring back our wealth, we'll bring back our dreams. It's called American exceptionalism, folks, and we're ashamed of it now. Absolutely ashamed. I remember during the campaign, Trump said, well, there's my African-American friend. And then we had to go through all that. So he comes back and he tells us, this is where it gets interesting, folks. He says he's going to have the people, the liberals keep talking, complaining, whatever you want to call it, about this trillion dollar, what do they call it, infrastructure bill to do all these things. Conservatives are kind of like, you know, how important is it? The other, I think, we'll just move on. And so he talks about we're going to build roads, highways, bridges, airports, tunnels, and railways all across our wonderful nation. He says we'll get our purpose off of weather welfare. Weather and back to work. Hands. Anyway, we will get our people off of welfare and back to work. Rebuilding our country with American hands and American labor. So he's basically saying that we need to make it difficult for other nationalities or people from other countries to have the same break, to just, you know, whatever. So he goes on and he says, we're going to seek friendship and goodwill with the nations of the world, but only with the understanding that it's the right of all nations to put their own interests first. He says, we do not seek to impose our way of life on anyone, but rather to let it shine as an example by everyone to follow. We will reinforce, this is the Trump inaugural speech, by the way, folks, if you didn't get to hear it. We will reinforce old alliances and form new ones, and unite the civilized world against radical Islamic terrorism, which we will eradicate completely from the face of the earth. The bedrock of our politics will be a total allegiance to the United States of America. And through our loyalty to our country, we will rediscover our loyalty to each other. When you open your heart to patriotism, there's no room for prejudice, he says. And then from there on down, you know, so he goes on and on. He talks about, you know, he really nails on a ton of points, folks. He really lays it out in depth. He says we're going to make people wealthy, we're going to, you know, and all the stuff he's doing by creating jobs and stimulating the economy is only a beginning. And I just hope it's a good beginning, because I kind of believe it will be. So anyway, we have, he says, together we'll make America strong again. We'll make them wealthy again. We're going to make our American people proud again. We'll make them safe again. And yes, together, he says, we will make America great again. Thank you, God bless, and God bless America. That's basically the kind of huge thing. But so that was quite the inaugural address, quite the circumstances. 70 Democratic congressmen, you know, passed, stepped out, bowed down, whatever you want to call it. It made those who went look, you know, interesting. And so we've got to be sensitive to this and that, but at the same time, we've got to be wise. So yesterday, or whatever day it is, Wednesday, I was reading over a list of, what would you call it, narrative agenda that apparently slipped out or leaked out of the Trump office. And he talked, you know, I've got this information on Saul Alinsky, not all from him, but this is what Obama's been focused on the whole time. And when we go down, essentially what we're looking at is, it says here, as long as a permanent, unelected bureaucracy Where'd that go? As long as a permanent unelected bureaucracy, a.k.a. the shadow government, continue to call the shots in the halls of power and the reach of the police state continues to expand, the crisis has not been averted yet. Here's a glimpse, it says, of some of the nefarious government programs that we'll be encountering on our journey through the treacherous waters of 2017. And then he goes through these areas that are just critically need attention, okay? Mandatory quarantines. This is where things are just changing, folks, fast. We've had our close calls, and then we've been stifled by major world events, and we've just got to get ourselves in a position where we're, you know, where we're liquid in those areas. So anyway, mandatory quarantines without due process or informed consent. And it says there's a new rule, this is from the Trump campaign, that proposes by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the government agents will be empowered to indefinitely detain any traveler they suspect of posing a medical risk to others without providing an explanation, subject them to medical tests without their consent. And it goes on and on. So, and it goes, and carry out such detentions and quarantines without any kind of due process. Okay, I'm going to try to streamline this. So then he goes into mental health assessments by non-judicial personnel. We're hearing this everywhere. We're hearing it about police. We're hearing it about doctors that aren't specialized in certain areas. We're hearing about neighbors. See something, say something. I mean, I think if you pray and seek wisdom, God will guide you. You know if something bad's going on or not, in my opinion. Unless you're just built where that's not your case, then you can rely on various forms of that. So, you know, and then they go into the tracking chips for humans that Momentum's building on the government to be able to track citizens, whether through the use of RFID chips embedded in a national ID and or through microscopic chips embedded in one's skin in December 16, the House of Representatives overwhelmingly approved legislation that allowed police to track individuals suffering for some time from mental disability. And you notice it says sometime. I'm not sure what exactly that means, but I think that we all know what it means. And then it goes on, as a result of nationwide push to train a broad spectrum of so-called gatekeepers, such as pastors, teachers, hairstylists, stylists, bartenders, police, on and on and on. So these are Trump-isms, which I would agree with quite a bit. So let's go through this real quick. These are different. This is what the future holds. These are the things that, even if they come to fruition, you're going to have some issues. So we've got tracking chips for citizens. We've got military training to deal with anti-establishment movements in megacities. The reason that it may appear that this is okay is because we're under the assumption that our government is there to protect us. Folks, you know, you study Rome or, you know, people bring up Nazi Germany. I mean, this stuff really, it's the same vitriol. It's the same stuff, you know, and it just keeps manifesting itself in each time more and more and more. So he goes on. He talks about government censorship of anything it classifies as disinformation, fake news. This is the new thing. You can flag something as fake news on Facebook and they kill it. They don't check. They just kill it. And it's not fake news. But this is one thing. This is all going back to Karl Marx's finest hour, folks. So we've got threat assessments where the government agents, with the help of automated eyes and a growing arsenal of high-tech software and, of course, techniques, government propaganda urging Americans to turn into spies and whatever else. But, you know, this is where we're at right now. War on cash, folks. This is a real interesting one that we're faced with. The government and its corporate partners are engaged in a concerted campaign to do away with what they refer to as large bills, 20s, 50s, and 100s. Now, I don't know if you're aware, but at the time of FDR implementing the quote-unquote gold confiscation, and I do believe that the executive order number that time, I don't know. So, but anyway, basically what's going on with cash is when they implemented the law, it was under the RICO Act. And under the RICO Act, the comment that came out from the government was, if people have enough money to buy a palatial estate, the government has a right to know. No, it does not. But the point is that $10,000 in, you know, 1934, when the RICO Act went in, man, or even think of $1,000. I mean, you could rock the world with that amount of money back then, when an average sales home price was 700 and some bucks, and now it's, you know, I don't remember what it figures out. It's 20 some hundred bucks in similarity, at least. So anyway, they say they, you know, they always start slow. They want to get rid of all kinds of things, but certain things work. There's timeless policies and principles and, you know, all that. So we've got the war on cash. It says people will have less privacy. Electronic commerce makes it easier for Big Brother to see what we're doing, thereby making it simpler to bar activities that it doesn't like, such as purchasing salt, sugar, big bottles of soda, and Big Macs, which basically you can create a bomb with everything but the Big Mac. But those come with a Big Mac. Then we get into expansive surveillance, you know, where we're using nets, drag nets in areas of popular frequency with certain people on the page. You know, so we've just getting watched everywhere. You've got everything from drones to stuffed animals to plates and nice quality, you know, all kinds of stuff. So we're talking, we've got our police are becoming militarized, because the once peaceful communities are transforming into military outposts, complete with tanks, weaponry, and other equipment designed to the battlefield. So police are shooting unarmed citizens. We know that's been going on. I'm not saying one way or the other on it. It's just what we know. So we're getting, you know, one after the other, unarmed citizens being shot. Sure, the news coverage is getting a little more extensive because knowledge shall increase, and that may not be a good spot to be. We've got the police shootings. We've got false flags and terrorist attacks. False flags are going on all over. They're getting us to do things that are crazy. This last terrorist attack was to prevent certain kinds of clothing. Where still they believe you could hide a ceramic knife or something in there, and I guess, but then the other stuff we're facing is endless wars to keep America's military empire employed. It's an employment program to keep the military alive and well. It's pretty much what, you know, what's going on out there. So we've just, the war is an absolute endless thing. It talks about attempts by the governments, by the government to identify, target, and punish so-called domestic extremists. And then we get the label, and it's one thing to have the label. It's another thing if I didn't say that. So anyway, so we've got attempts by the government to come after extremism. We've got SWAT team raids. People don't realize there's more than 80,000 paramilitary-style raids carried out every year. This is more than 200 SWAT team raids each and every day, where police crash through doors, damage private property, kill citizens, terrorize adults, you know, just harm or absolutely terrorize children, kill family pets, assault and shoot anyone that's perceived as threatening, and most often in the pursuit of someone merely suspected of a crime. I mean, folks, these are the kinds of things that make you wonder. So let's just buzz through this. We've got erosion of private property. Private property is says that a little at a time when the SWAT, I get a call from SWAT, you know, whatever. So let's go on from there. We've got these police raids going on all the time. We've got erosions of private property. That's, like I said, a little at a time when SWAT teams and other government agencies can invade your home, break down your door, kill your dog, even wound and kill you, damage your furniture, and terrorize with friends in your living room, installing, you know, electronics or whatever it is you do most of the time, stuff for the roof, and raising chickens and blah, blah, blah. So over-criminalization is another huge concern. People are spending far too long in our prison systems. We have the most active prison systems in the world. We've got the highest per capita number of men. So anyway, we've got all this stuff going on. So we're over-criminalizing everything. We've got so many men that are of childbearing age, and they're just, you know, I don't know how they got it all figured out. But basically, we've got dealing with strip searches and the denigration of bodily integrity. We essentially, our body is our temple. We are responsible to take care of it, protect it with dignity and respect. And, you know, the strip search is an absolute, you got to admit, it's a deep violation of your personal space. It's just unnatural. And when you go to Israel, I've heard someone say on the news multiple times, they're like, just go to Tel Aviv, just go to Tel Aviv. Look how they handle it. They have trained psychologists, and they'll say they can't always get it all right either. But if you have something like that, stare at it, you know, and you can figure it out. Not staring at the strip search, that is, just whatever number. I'm going to need to do some stuff. So we've got the world's transferring over to drones. I'm trying to buzz through this stuff. These are things that Trump camp came out with and that are just threatening our future safety. We've got this extensive drone use and control. People are able to look in your windows. They put these extraordinarily powerful cameras on them. And they're able to get into airspace never before suspected and just watch things on a screen. And, you know, so we've just, our privacy's at risk. I think the other problem is there's so much electronic stuff out there that when you start paying a little bit here and a little bit there, it's easy to get yourself in a pickle again. So, you know, ministering to jails and, or whatever it may be. But, you know, I'm seeing now what I would call censorship. So basically the First Amendment activities are being pummeled, basically. Punched, kicked, choked, chained, and generally gagged all across the country. They're creating free speech zones, bubble zones, trespass zone, anti-flooding obligation. If you start, we've got censorship going on, the control of the media, the absolute connection with the government, coins that are, look one way, or we're just being stifled in our speech, folks. So we're transitioning towards fascism. So at Princeton University, in a recent survey, our elected officials, especially those in the nation's capital, represent the interests of the rich and powerful rather than the average citizen. This is the feeling of those, better off people, but I doubt it. It says we're no longer a representative republic, which is amen to that, with big business and big government having fused into a corporate state. And it's interesting what fascism does. It's interesting what power does. Obama was given a lot of power, far too much favoritism, far too much approval, and he really did some damage. I mean, he would never, ever know it. Once we got done with him. But the point is, I mean, that whole thing where, we've got, fascism on the rise in the hugest way. There's plenty of room to weed out from that if you've ever, thinking that along those lines. So James Madison, who's the father of the Constitution, put it best when he wrote, where'd we go? So, take alarm at the first experiment with liberties. Anyone with even a casual knowledge about current events knows that the first experiment on our freedoms happened long ago. This is what a second opinion, but it's basically saying, just when we start messing with liberty and freedom, we're playing with fire, and we're fast moving past the point of no return. That's where this country is. This country's a dynamic country. It's not stagnant. Donald Trump, folks, is a godly gift from God. It really is a gift. He preserves and protects. And God's been good in this situation. And so we're very thankful and blessed to have that. The inauguration's not supposed to be a political event, but rather a cultural ritual. Even the Bushes and Clintons showed up, showed the high road there. And anger, are, staples of grief to process it. So we've got, it's not a political event. The Bushes and Clintons got slaughtered by Trump and they still showed up. And I'm talking about these snowflake left-wingers that just can't take the heat without melting down, literally. And denial and anger are all stages of grief. So our global economy around the world, essentially, is not working. So we need our global economy around the world, the American influence, just doesn't work in this situation. So we're leading to this kind of denial and anger and stages of grief and frustration with finances and all this is what's leading to Brexit. It's what led to Brexit, the Trump election, et cetera. We had the largest drop since the election in the stock market this last week. And we've got just, I don't know. I don't want to get too far down that. We're kind of short on time. Basically, folks, we've got a good army, a good protector, but he's not going to be able to change everything. We put too much faith in the executive branch. He's very limited in his abilities. You are not, on the other hand, folks. When you buy God-ordained, God-blessed, metals or investments, you are preserving and protecting your wealth in the same physical way he would do it should he be here. And the buying opportunity is terrific. The metals are showing some life. They're predicting a very strong dollar next year. I've seen some really potent articles about what metals are going to be doing, and the luxury drive that's coming into numismatic coins. And so basically, whether it's 401ks or IRAs or whatever, folks, I just say, let us build your portfolio. We're very, very good at it. It's so hard sometimes to watch people want to invest a certain way that we know is just not something we would recommend. It's just not something that's good for them. And we do everything in our power to be able to understand that thoroughly. So, I don't know. It's just, folks, I just really ask you, beseech you, if you've got money in the bank and it's not a 401k or IRA, get it. Even if it is, just give us a call. Let us get you going, and we'll build you a nice portfolio. And we'll just get you stable for the long haul so you can actually make big returns. You can make solid returns until the market moves hard, and then you make the big returns. The paper down is it. Yeah, what if the Dow goes up another 5%? That means you might make 0.5%. Our product is a 1-to-1 ratio of reveal. In other words, it goes up, you make money. So anyway, thanks again, Coins Plus. Take care. God bless. See you Monday. Bye-bye.